There's people that when they get a dog and they're enthusiastic about it, they can pick up dog crap, and then they have someone pick up crap for them. I never want to be that guy. I don't care how many years experience I have in it. It doesn't mean I'm void of doing that task.
Do you feel you should be further along in your contracting business? Are you tired of not making the money that you know that you're worth? Or maybe you're winning, but you just want to win at a higher level. I'm Tom Reber, and this is the Contractor Fight. Turn this shit up and get ready to earn more respect, earn more money, and be a better leader in your business. Oh, and P.S., this show is not for thin-skinned people. If you offend easily or have a victim mentality, you should probably just move the fuck on right now. Let's go. All right, fighters, today I get to shoot the shit with my buddy John Houlihan. He's Vintage Builders. If you look him up on Instagram, Vintage Builders, or Here's Johnny H on Instagram. And also check out, he's also the co-host of the Modern Craftsman podcast, where I had the honor of being a guest of theirs recently. That should be out pretty soon. But anyway, listen, John and I talk about just bringing your passion to what you do, building your brand a little bit, how to know when it's time to make the leap and go off on your own, and a bunch of other good stuff. So without further ado, here's my buddy, John. Welcome to the Contractor Fight. See, we just talked for 5 minutes and I didn't hit the fucking record button. I did this whole here's Johnny thing. We talked about the Johnny Carson show, and then we talked about The Shining. We're not going to revisit all that bullshit because the moment is gone. Okay. Because we were shooting the shit. Right, John? We were shooting the shit before we recorded, and I was like, oh, I don't need to record all this 10 minutes of us shooting the bull.
Yeah.
And we get into it. You just start telling this amazing story. Like, you were about to change lives, and then I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't hit record. So, so one of the things, as I shared in the intro, is that you are one of the hosts of the Modern Craftsman podcast. So before we get into your story and stuff, share a little bit about that show, because I want to give our listeners here other kick-ass resources to help them grow stronger businesses, man. So what do you got going on there?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast really grew from we used to do some live meetups. You know, Nick and I used to get together and just talk, shoot the shit, like you said, and then people would ask, hey, can you record those? And we couldn't, just because it was talking about, hey, me leaving, wanting to leave my company I was currently with, and him having some bad clients or whatever. And so we started that way, and then it kind of morphed into how do we give back? How do we have these stories that we continue to have, but we don't just keep it between ourselves? That was the main kicking off point, was like, hey, you and I might have a great conversation on the phone. All right, now it's only between you and me. Or I might have a great conversation with my client. How do we bring that to more of the masses? So we decided to record them through the podcast. And we wanted to have it more like, I love Joe Rogan's podcast and the fight compilation, where he's got four of his buddies. Just, it goes from everywhere from flat earth talk to who shot JFK to some UFC fights, and bringing, you know, Nick together, Tyler, Grace, and myself. And we all have we're in different places in our careers.
Yeah.
Meaning I've been doing it for 24, 25 years, started as a laborer, worked my way all the way up. And now I don't wear a tool belt at all unless I'm at home. And Nick, who's 5-6 years in, had an amazing growth spurt. He's like my teenager, you know, just turned 13, spurt up to 5'2". The kid started as a carpenter doing, you know, decks and wainscoting, putting everything he had into it. And now it's grown to, I think he's had 17 or 18 employees with his own cabinet shop, millwork, all that, and running, not even small projects. They're small, super high-end condo renovations in the city and doing new construction throughout the burbs and everywhere. So it's really showing the growth. And then Tyler in particular is someone who I kind of lean towards a lot, because he always asks, do you really give your clients 100%? And that's a great question I ask myself every day, but he does. He does one at a time, and he self-performs, I want to say 90% of it, besides obviously your mechanicals. And he does that. He shuts down everything else in his life to do each task. And so each one of us make good money, have a great career, great brand, have time for our family, but we're all at different positions and we're all happy with the positions we're at.
You know, I love that, because so many times, you know, you talk about Tyler, he's single man show, self performs, does one thing at a time. If what I've learned over the years is if you're getting what you want, you're successful.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the simplest thing for me. And it's cool because you guys are in all these different spots, yet you all are incredibly successful. You're happy, you know, from what I can tell, right? From what you told, like, you know, it's not like I live with you.
But what we project.
Yeah. And so, so I think that's important for people to hear, because I know early on, I always felt this pressure like, oh, if I don't have 30 employees in the field, if I don't have this, I'm not successful, because we're always comparing ourselves to somebody else.
And it's even worse. That's even worse today.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Like more people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all over social media. So what I love about your show, man, The Modern Craftsman, and we'll get into you here in a minute. You brought up the whole Joe Rogan thing. When you first talked to me about getting on, I'd seen the show before. I started paying attention to like the lengths of the episodes. I'm like, damn, they sent a calendar invite for 3 hours, man. Like,
yeah, we put in some time, man. Once you get to know somebody again, you listen to a lot of pro podcasts where it's a lot of celebrity stuff like that. They know how to tell their story. So when you get, you know, whether it's, you know, a carpenter on that just does carpentry, or you get on someone who knows how to tell their story, you need to make them comfortable. Like when we start off, I know we edited the first 10 minutes of our discussion, we hit record right off the bat. So basically people don't know that they're getting into it, because it can be overwhelming when you have three seasoned veterans, and we've had kids on that want to project a certain thing, and it goes on for 20 minutes. And then Tyler and myself will be like, dude, who are you kidding right now? What are you talking about? Like it calls your bluff. And we don't do it in a mean way, but you know, we get a good amount of people that listen, you know, maybe 4 or 5 people. We don't want to let them down by going, oh yeah, we shot the shit with this guy and we burned someone's time that's listening to it. Right. So it does. I mean, I like the long format myself, and you know, we started doing a Survey Monkey where people can go back in and basically give their feedback on what they like. Do they want the intro to be different? Do they want to be more interview process, or do interview in the beginning and then let it roll into the more cash? So we are trying to evolve it, because we are contractors and builders, not, you know, seasoned podcasters, even though we're 3 years in, 117 episodes, maybe 127 episodes in, and over a million downloads. So it's a hustle, man.
It's a grind. I liked it, man. I thought it was a cool vibe. And it kind of reminded me of that, you know, the long form stuff I used to listen to a lot. I haven't in a while, was like Tim Ferriss.
Yeah.
He'd sit down with like Jamie Foxx and Kevin Costner, man. I ate that up. I used to go on hikes and I'd download that, and I'd have 2 hours in my head or in my ears, you know, of Jamie Foxx telling him a story. And I think Jamie Foxx's interview on Tim Ferriss was like the best one ever or something as far as downloads go. It was a super cool story. So was Kevin Costner's. But all right, so let's get into you. You talked a little bit about giving 115%. You're talking about Tyler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually segues into something I saw online of you, where you were at a venue with your wife, and you saw somebody strumming a guitar.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And that hit me, man. You did a video on that. I found it on your YouTube channel a while back, and share that, because I thought that was pretty cool, your take on that.
Well, yeah. So my wife is like a blues. She loves blues. And Johnny Lang, we've seen him a few times. And every time I leave a concert with him, it's usually a smaller venue. So it's kind of like maybe 50 to 150 people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you go to a huge concert, like if you go to Kenny Chesney or something like that, you might be a mile back. You can't really read the guy's face. And being at that small venue, being very intimate, it spoke to me on a couple different levels, is that, you know, we're making a custom home for a person or a renovation. It can be just as intimate. And it is. You're talking about the craziest little things. It's like, hey, do I need to put a bench or a niche at a certain height in a shower for the master? Not because they're going to put their stuff away. It's because the wife has to shave. And it's like all these different intimate moments. Do you do a lot of tub time? Like, do we have to do a volcanic, you know, stone tub, or should we just do a fiberglass that doesn't hold heat? Like, you have to have all these different conversations about how these people live in this home, because it's going to be a place forever. The goal with a home for us is that it becomes an heirloom again, meaning that you've educated the client enough. you've brought them through the entire process and had an experience that they remember, including their kids, that maybe, just maybe, it's not a commodity anymore, and that they'll value it enough that they'll be like, my kids want to have this home because they built it. Mm-hmm. But that Johnny Lang experience was like, God, man, I'm getting every bit of him, every practice session, every strum of the guitar, every, you know, vocal lesson, and every, you know, fight he's had with the band to get everything right. That's what went through my head when the song was coming on and he was going through it. And I was like, I walking away with my missus, and I was like, babe, how do I give this to my clients? How do I, he didn't say, this is what everyone does.
Yeah.
He didn't say, hey, I'm going to give it everything I have. I'm the most passionate blues guy out there. He didn't have to say any of that. That's just your takeaway. I want it to be the takeaway. And in today, everyone projects and portrays and curates what they want it to be. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather just tell the story of how it is and then let the story tell its part. And that's what they did in that concert. So that's kind of what my crazy mind wants to do.
Well, that resonated with me because I've been a musician forever. I played drums and gigged 5-6 nights a week for many years, did a lot of studio work and shit like that. And so music's always been a part of me. And so when I was getting to know you more online and stuff, I remember seeing that thing just going, that's pretty cool. Because I've been in those moments where you see somebody's craft. I don't care what the craft is. It'd be carpentry. It could be, you know, playing music. It'd be a guy swinging a golf club or whatever it is. When you're around somebody that's all in, it's a really cool vibe, you know? And I think that's something that, however you've brought it to your clients, I think you're doing that. I think back to, I was having a conversation. There was a guy in one of our coaching groups and he can't figure out, he hadn't sold a damn job. What is it? It's beginning of July right now. As of like 2 weeks ago, he hadn't sold a job in like 3 months. Mm. And he's a specialty contractor. And, he recorded a video and he put it out to the group. He was owning his crap. He was, you know, basically, I'm struggling here and this and that. And I called him up and I go, dude, here's the deal. I said, I looked at that video and then I went back and looked at some of your other stuff on your business page and Instagram and this and that. I know exactly why you're not selling anything. And he's like, why? And I says, it ain't the word tracks. It's not the scripts. It's not this. It's not. I said, you lack enthusiasm, man. There is nothing coming out of you that says you love this. Yep. And I remember I used to sell Pazlode nailers, nail guns and nails for a minute. And I used to cold call all these carpenters. And I remember going on this one guy's job site. I sold him a couple pallets of nails and some guns. And I come back to the office to turn the order in. My boss calls me in like a half an hour later. He's like, what happened here? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, I've been trying to get this guy's business for 3 years or whatever the heck it was. It's some crazy amount of time. And I said, I don't know. I just went to the job site. And so he picked up the phone, called the guy and says, why did you buy from Reber and not from me from all these years? He goes, because he was enthusiastic. It just made me want to buy something from him. And that's what you're talking. That's that unspoken energy that you're putting out to the world. So it's not surprising that you've come out of the gate the way you have in your business and you're making the bang that you are. So anyway, I say all that to just go, I love when you can see somebody wear their passion on their sleeve, man.
Try. It's, I don't know how else to do it.
Yeah. It's so tell us a story. You, I once heard a rumor you walked away from like a $200,000 a year gig, man.
I did. Yes, I did.
And you had a job, what were you running job sites? Was that your thing?
Yeah. I mean, I was running sites. I was doing what I do now. I mean, here's the thing is I've had companies in the past that are my own, and I've also run other companies over the years. So I've been the director of operations for two other companies. And then when I shifted to my last company, it wasn't in the, it's funny. I always joke about how this industry can keep you honest. And, you know, when you get into certain roles where you get a soft chair, you can forget how to, I talk to my clients a lot and I go, it's funny. There's people that when they get a dog, and they're enthusiastic about it, they can pick up dog crap. Then they make a certain amount of money and then they have someone pick up crap for them. And then they forget how to pick up crap.
Yeah.
I never want to be that guy that forgets how to pick up crap. So it's like, I'm willing to do people always say it, but you never want to give someone the task to do that you wouldn't do yourself. And if that means digging a trench, putting my job site sign up, whatever it is, I don't care how many years experience I have in it. It doesn't mean I'm void of doing that task. So yeah, I mean, I had a director of operations job before my last company. And then I moved into a much smaller company where you have to take on many roles. And I think this also goes back to what Tyler says, is that do you put 100% into each? Do you get a, does your client get 100% out of you? Yeah. And that's a tough question for me. And I juggle with it all the time, is when you're having four or five products where I have a spreadsheet I need to do for cost of completes here, and I'm trying to get another budget done, and I'm approving a design in this notebook here. It's like, am I giving 100% to each one of these things? You know, and is each client getting 100% of me? And I take that very serious, because Tyler, I look up to quite a bit on how he's able to keep on his line. Yeah. With everything else and the growth and all the distractions, he's able to stay on his line. And I think it's tough where I moved to that company, much smaller. So as director, you were basically designing stuff, and then you were also implementing design. So we'd run between 4 to 7 builds. That was like 6,000 square foot houses up to massive custom remodels and new construction. Meaning we did an underground sport complex for a client where we put a 50 by 90 underground sport court, 37 feet in the ground. And you're doing that while you're still doing these tasks of these custom homes, semi-custom. So you're able to, I guess, ADD, as you can tell by my conversation, I've jumped from 6 different topics. It works very well for me in this mentality, yeah, where I can bounce to that, come back to this, but never lose my train of thought. I can juggle quite a few things. I think I built 28 to 39 houses in the last company over 5 years. And then we did some amazing projects where we did renovation in Sherbourne, Mass. That was in Magnolia Magazine's first edition. I think we did $1.6 million in 10 months. Usually if you did that amount of volume in that short amount of time, you don't get quality. You get a finished product, but you don't get all three. And we did it, and it was absolutely unbelievable. Still friends with that client today. And it's, so you're able to do that stuff while running four other houses. I had 2 or 3 guys underneath me, but I had this mentality, which I look back and I don't know if it's right, but we would bounce from job to job. Meaning, you know, if I'm at one job in the morning, I make rounds, then one of my other guys is at the other jobs going the opposite direction. So yeah, you basically have this circle of coverage, and someone else is proofreading your mistakes. Meaning, I don't go, hey, I hit Southgate, you don't need to hit that. No, I want that person to hit that as well. And that's kind of been our mentality of management. But no, I did walk away from $200,000. And it was more the fact that if I was going to pour my heart and soul into a company and work endless hours, I don't have an off button similar to you, and the clients knew who was doing all the work, who was representing of that company and building that brand on social media, my name had nothing to do with it at the end of the day. And that was really tough.
All right, fighters, one thing that's jumping out at me as a problem is the lack of focus that the average contractor has on sales training. And that's not surprising, because a lot of contractors, we do what comes natural to us, and that's usually the stuff out in the field. But listen, a couple things you got to understand. Nothing happens without a sale. You don't produce the thing you do. You don't have team meetings. You don't cut paychecks. Nothing happens in your business if you are not selling projects. And that is your number one job. And it's always your number one job, but even more so with the struggles that are going on right now. Another big thing with this whole sales mindset is the typical consumer will more than usual attempt to play games with you during an economic crisis. They're going to try to pitch you against somebody else. They're reading articles on all the, quote unquote, air quotes here, professional sites about how to beat up contractors and how to get the best prices and all this other garbage. Listen, sales training is going to prepare you to head those objections off and make sure that you're only spending time with the right people. And then finally, listen, lead flow typically decreases by quite a bit. That means you have less at-bats to hit your break-even numbers and all that other stuff. So you actually have to sell, in most cases, at a higher profit margin than you normally would to recover your overhead with the less at-bats that you have. So listen, I've been beating this drum for 6 years in the Contractor Sales Academy. I'm a co-founder of that kick-ass program. For 6 years, guys, we've been teaching contractors how to sell at higher rates, how to not run around wasting a bunch of windshield time. And the flavor of the month right now in the world is due online and virtual estimates. Well, guys, we've been doing it for 6 years. And if you're interested in learning the methods that we teach and how to really connect with your clients and how to sell your jobs at higher rates and stuff like that, I want to invite you to go do a free demo with one of our team members at contractorsalesacademy.com/demo. Schedule your time, grab 10, 15 minutes and see what's under the hood that we have going on at Contractor Sales Academy. So contractorsalesacademy.com/demo. Don't half-ass this sales stuff. Right now, it's all about putting points on the board, and we want to help you do that. I'm out.
So before I hit record, I before I screwed up the record, we talked about how you and I both get that question all the time. You know, guys will, hey, I work for somebody else. I'm thinking about pulling the trigger and going off on my own. I'm not going to get on my soapbox here, but I actually have a belief that, and I'll share this quickly, 70 to 80% of contractors that own their own businesses, I personally believe shouldn't own their own business. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's just my, and I won't get into all the reasons why. So I'm, and maybe it's just because I'm older now and I'm wiser and I know what it takes to run a business. And when I was younger, I just started and I figured it out. But now I look back and I think this is why they send young men to war too, right? You know what I mean? Because we're a little naive. So how do you know, how did you know, and what advice do you give somebody who's on that fence of going, hey, I'm going to pull the trigger, go off on my own. What are some things you wish you did, wish you knew, wish you could share? What do you got?
So, I mean, for me, it was, again, it's never usually super obvious. It's usually a couple things that are triggers that set it off. And for me, it was more the fact that, you know, the environment that we created, I mean, the guys that we brought in and hired were people that I kind of handpicked myself. Like my right-hand man, my partner today for Vintage was a guy that my wife was like, you need to hire Benny. Benny's you for your boss. You need a guy like that for yourself. So I went and met Benny. He had just gotten a job with Feeney Brothers. He was a weekend. He was doing training. He quit his job that week and came working for us. So like, okay. I brought these people into this environment, and then it got to a point where we were all really frustrated for working our asses off and not really seeing, not so much money, just seeing, you know, being grateful. Our clients were, but it wasn't reciprocated in the company itself. So that was a huge trigger. So, I mean, going the mental health part of it was I would work, I don't know how many hours a day, crazy amounts of hours. And then my day would shut off, meaning the job site wasn't calling me. Whether that's a vendor, a sub, a client, whatever. And then our boss would start calling us at 9 o'clock at night. So mentally, I found myself snapping at my kids. At the time, they were younger. Now they're 13 and 9. I found myself snapping at my kids over, you know, having a huge amount of tolerance of work capacity and then coming home and then getting that phone call when I finally got home at 7 o'clock at night, 8:30 at night and going, really? So I'd be frustrated. That exact really part. And then I'd walk in the house and like, I say this story, my kids would hit me with like a tennis ball in the face or in the junk. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, you son of a bitch. But I'd flip out. Now I literally just start laughing. Mm-hmm. And then I fire back at him or whatever. But that was a huge thing. Meaning it wasn't healthy for me to stay in that environment. And turns out it wasn't healthy for any of our guys to stay there. So that was a huge turning point for me, but there's a risk thing. Meaning I talk about this with a lot of my clients. One of my clients told me to leave. I was there for 5 years. I was a paper partner. Meaning when I left my company before that, it said, hey, you're a partner. Like, you get X amount of percentage of each job. That never panned out. So I kept working thinking I'll work harder to make that pan out and never did. So one of my clients, probably my most exclusive client, he approached me and was like, hey, what's the deal with you? Like, are you a partner for real? And I'm like, no, it's, you know, I'm making excuses for my boss. And he's like, you got to give an ultimatum. I'm like, bro, he was part of like the Counting Cards team for Cornell. You know, that movie 21 where they went and took Vegas. That's one of the guys.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right. I'm like, I go, what's the deal? I do this with a lot of my clients. I don't ask them what they do, but I go, you know, you're successful. Do you see success a different way than me? Meaning I see success and there's a lot of clouds in the way. which makes it hard to get to my destination. Was it just easy for you to see it? And he sat down with me. He's just like, yeah. He goes, I was younger. I didn't have a family. I was able to take risk and I had huge rewards. Would I do that today? No. So for me, at whatever it was, 47 or 48, I mean 38, with, you know, two kids, a wife, a spot that I was really comfortable with, you know, taxes, you know, you have all that burden of life,
yeah.
You know, and I didn't want to change my lifestyle. I wanted to make sure my job was able to make that move and keep my lifestyle, mm-hmm. which is a huge, huge thing that keeps people in this point of pain with the existing client or existing, boss or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So for me, it was definitely that, making that decision and just going, you know what? I had to lean on my experience going, hey, I've been doing this for 20 years. Come on. Like I would be at my job and they'd be like, my boss would be like, you know, I wouldn't do it this way. I'm like, hey, you know what? Just throw away my experience. I've only been doing this my entire
right.
life.
Right.
The only thing I know how to do better than this is walk and skate. Like, dude, give it to me. Like this, if I'm not doing it right, then I need to get out of this industry. And so then we decided between that and another client who we worked for, basically cornered me in a room and said, you got to leave, not leave the project, meaning leave my company that I was with. And they bought me a property. They bought Ben and I a property and said, hey, here's your first spec. And they said, go. And it was like, so they forced my hand and they still are one of our investors now for doing some specs. But to what I do get this question quite a bit, and telling my story doesn't give a lot of guys, you know, the ability to go off on their own. What I found is that whether it's going off on your own or at least even changing companies, there's a point in time where everyone goes to a job and they work. Okay. You need to look at it like they need to give you experience as well. Meaning you need to take a takeaway beyond a paycheck and a salary and all that stuff and benefits. As soon as you stop learning at that company, you need to start moving on.
Yeah.
It's the same way you would for anything. If you had a girlfriend or a husband that wasn't reciprocating what was happening, then you need to move on. It's right. not a relationship, and work is a relationship. I see my work wife more than I see my own wife, which is Benny. And it's like, you talk to these people way more. You talk to clients more than you talk to your family. So you do need to invest in that. Meaning if you're a laborer, and I went to the Builder Show last year and this kid was like, I'm going to start my own company. And I'm like, yo, red light, pump the brakes. Like he goes, well, you know, I get all my tasks done. I'm like, but if you're a laborer right now and you get all your tasks done, why don't you get all your tasks done from Monday to Wednesday? And then Thursday, ask if you can go sit with the estimator or right. go sit with the PM for a day. And because you've gotten all your tasks done, so you've actually made money for the company. Now this is time for you to get some more knowledge. This yep. is your time. And whether it may not be, you know, you could take a whole Thursday, maybe you work your ass off Monday through Thursday and you take a half day on Wednesday to go sit with that estimator, learn estimating, learn how that guy goes to the job site and does the buying of the job, you know, whatever it is, the PM, make sure you're getting that. And if they say no, then you need to start looking.
One of my uncle's good friends, and he's retired now. He's an older guy, not old. He's just older. He got out of high school. He might have even dropped out. Honestly, I know he was super young, maybe 17 years old. He went and worked for pretty much every trade for like a year. That was what he did. So, and then he started his home building company and ended up being one of the biggest ones in the area, and super high end custom stuff, super profitable, had their shit dialed in, all because he took that time to gain that wisdom. You know, he was playing the long game. And I think that's what a lot of guys don't do. They come out of the gate and they think they're going to have the success you've had or something, you know, without paying their dues, but people forget you had 20 something years in the industry and all that. The one point I want to make here for people that are listening is whoever your former employers were, they had an FW, they had a fucking winner. They had somebody that was, yep. That knew his shit, wanted to be passionate about what he was doing and was giving his best and all this. And again, I don't know them, your former employers, but I'm sitting here listening. I'm going, so many contractors, builders, whatever you want to call it, we're griping about not being able to find and keep good people. And so to me, that's a culture issue in those businesses where, and I see this a lot, where
they're cracking the whip, they're trying to bang projects out and this and that. If they would have just taken the time and just said, John, how are you? You know? And again, I don't know the context of everything, but I'm just sitting here going in as a leader. It's a wake up call, I think, for us to remember, don't take anything for granted with your people. You know, like you said, if I'm going to stop learning, it's time to move on. If I stop learning, it's time to move on. I think that's why it's so important to be profitable as a business so that you can reinvest into your people. You can send them events, you can get them the training that they want, so they feel like if that's really important to them. And so I just want everyone to hear that. Like you were a rock star in some of these companies and they let you go. And I think they let you go. Now they could have done everything right. You would have had the entrepreneurial itch too, right? Maybe that's the case. I get that. But I just see it a lot where people don't generally leave for the money. They leave because of some other issue going on in the business. They don't feel respected. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing where you shared about you were a partner on paper, but they never really ponied up. I mean, I hear that all the time where employers make promises to their employees and they don't fulfill them. And then they're surprised why the people leave the business. So,
to me, it was, I've been promised pretty much every company I've ever been with.
Yeah.
From the very beginning. And it's, I mean, even my first, I was in college. I worked all the way through college as a carpenter, lead carpenter. And then when it was time for that owner to pony up, I think I was making $18 an hour. I graduated college and I was running seven guys. And I was like, yo, this is where I get my bump, right? This is how it works. I got a diploma. It's that waving it around. And he's like, yeah, no, we're good. This is pretty much how it goes. And I was like, and again, my entire life, I've never really known that self-worth to be able to be like, dude, screw that. I'm out of here. No. So like, he was like, even that opportunity it wasn't me chasing it down. It was it presenting itself and me taking it was that, hey, he's like, you know what? I'm going to downsize. I'm not going to run, you know, four guys or five guys, whatever it was. And I'm like, so what's that mean for Monday? And he's like, yeah, you got to go to the job sites. We were spread out between four or five jobs and grab your tools. So I bought all my own tools over the years and chop saws, all that, tile saws. Every client I went to pick up my stuff, they said, don't bother, leave it. And they fired him on the spot. So I started my company right out of college. And my biggest mistake there was I started going and getting great projects from, whether it was that client told me to stay and goes, hey, keep renovating every room in this house until you get on your feet. I was like, that's amazing. But I got on my feet really quick and I wasn't ready because I had done the carpentry thing my entire leading up to that. I don't know how many years, probably 8 years going into that because I started when I was a junior in high school, all the way up to that point. And then no one had taught me how to bid jobs. My old boss, I say this all the time, he used to walk through a job with me and he walked the job with the client. I'd be just beside him and be like, yeah, that's 280,000. And I'm like, I can never be a GC. I don't know what the hell he just saw to add up to that. I was like, I don't know how to do that. And so I immediately knew, and he only told you what you needed to know. And the only other thing I ever took away from him was whenever he ordered stock for us, he'd always order a piece short. So we always made you want to understand the inventory and value the inventory because you only had so much. You couldn't just pick up more of it. Yeah. And, you know, but like that situation was I had to then pick up the line. So I started doing small renovations from basements to then 2,000 square foot additions to 9,000 square foot houses. And I never took my tool belt off. So as you took these two positions that started growing, being a carpenter and being a business owner, you couldn't do both of them side by side for the volume of work I was doing. Yeah. That's the calculation. So I needed to be able to either drop the tool belt if I was going to do that caliber of work to be able to manage that work.
Yeah.
So I never did that. And that was my downfall for that company is that I was doing 9,000 square foot houses and I couldn't, like Tyler, let go. So I was doing the trim, I was doing the tile, I was doing the cabinetry, I was doing the built-ins, I was doing all that. And I didn't grow my business to be able to accommodate all that scope of work that I was going to hold on to. So I let that go and then I became a PM. And that's where that's how I got rid of the tool belt and then started this career of management.
So this latest run here, Vintage, when did that start? What year?
2017. I actually drew the logo in 2015 or 16. I came home one day totally frustrated and it came pen to paper and I drew the entire logo, hand sketched it dead on. That's what the logo is today. Right. And it was more the fact that I saw a lot of things grow. Social media and that whole kind of window into everyone else's life.
Yeah.
Gave me a huge perspective of going, God, I could really do this right. Like, I have the knowledge, I have the dream, I have the passion. And then it's like, Vintage is the name. It wasn't taken. Like, I was like, oh my God, it's not incorporated. This is like, it's speaking to me. So we started it, and you know, we wanted to really come at it a different way. I think all the great stories you've ever talked about is people that have their own vision and don't really care if people call it crazy. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to take that image of an old historic home that has tons of character, no matter what it is. Like right now, I'm in a room where this house was renovated, $5 million house. It was all white trim. And the client said to us, we don't want any of that. We want character. So we removed all the collar ties, everything that's in here, and we put in real beams.
Yeah.
That were salvaged from another barn to give a character. And that's what we want, the essence of it. Like if your company could have a soul, that's what we're going to do for your home, is just kind of bring all our years of experience and pour it into that, where you get that one off. There's that Johnny Lang reference. Get that one off. So every room has, as we put it, a playlist. You ever listen to your playlist by accident and go, oh, that song's awesome. Damn, that song's good too. You forget. That's how I want you to walk through your house. I want you to walk through the kitchen and go, that room's awesome. And then you walk in the next room and be like, but that one's good too. So that's kind of our target.
So you see, you're segueing for me here, man. You're doing a great job. See, we got about 12 minutes left or so, 12, 15 minutes left.
Yeah.
You talked about, you saw things with social media and you're like, I could really do this right. I could, you know, what did you
tell a story?
What did you see and how did you approach building your brand? Because I'll tell you, you know, you and Nick and stuff, you guys were on my radar because of, you know, years ago, you know, because of social media.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I look at you and then I look at another builder or whoever, I'm not thinking of anybody. I'm just going, what are you seeing and how are you approaching things that's building the brand? And I'm got, guys listening to this, I'm not about going, hey, come on, because you have a lot of people on social media and you have a lot of followers. Followers don't pay the fucking bills, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I know we've had conversations. I've had conversations with Nick. Like, there's real money behind this stuff. And I'm curious, what did you see back then that made you go, I'm going all in here? And then how have you approached it?
So it's funny. I started Here's Johnny H. Before I had my company. That was kind of my own way of documenting my day-to-day. Like back in the day when I was a carpenter, I have images of where I used to stand in the same pile of dirt and take the image every day with a Polaroid instant camera and just take the same thing. That's what I started to do with Instagram.
Yeah.
With the company before that, I was writing a blog. That's because I was behind a desk a lot more often. But once I jumped to this other one, I had to be on the ground, boots on the ground. And it's utilizing every minute of your day the best. So Instagram became a great venue because you could take a quick shot, type a couple sentences. If you go way back, I had to delete probably 1,500 posts when I left my last gig. And it was a bummer for me, not because I had to delete the images, was the content I wrote. I remember my old boss told me one day, he goes, no one ever reads it. It's all about the pictures. And I was like, dude, I'm not about the pictures. It's 100% about what you write. And it's about, people say, hey, you can schedule your posts. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. My posts are your window into my life that day. What I'm thinking, what I'm seeing, what's inspiring me, what's frustrating me, how it's all working. And I think that's the thing, is that I started Instagram, I don't know, 8 years ago when it wasn't cool. And it was amazing that people, the followers, if you want to call followers anything, they gave me the net worth I never had. I mean, meaning if people were like, you know, I had a bad day, whatever crap was going down with my boss. And then you'd post this picture about how we went about this technique for success. Or I used to go like, hey, we're digging a hole, we're pouring walls by the end of this week, and we're framing the following week. And I'd make myself accountable through Instagram.
Okay.
And be like, hey, this is what we're doing. And then on a Thursday, it'd be like, you know what? I told everyone that was watching me, the three people, that I was going to have this done. And then they watched and be like, you really did it. It was like this kind of, it was a way to, you know, this can get boring and this can become monotonous. And no one talks about that, is that when you're a GC, you are alone a lot of the time. And that when you drive home from that job site, whether they didn't pay you or they, you know, they cut the bill down by $1,000, whatever it was, and they didn't value your work, that you're by yourself, you know, during that situation. You don't go home and then talk to your missus and go, hey, I got shorted because she's going to be like, dude, why are you doing this? She sees it in a different lens than you and me. And it's, that's what was key, is that you can be there for people and they can be there for you. And they built up my confidence. So I was like, dude, you know, when it got to like 10,000 people and me being, it's funny, I'm a quiet kid, you know, at home and all that. It's just like, that meant a lot to me that people were valuing that. And then talking like this old house and being valued by the people that you were taught by, in a way. And it then had a whole new light. So I was like, you know what? I need to do this. I can tell a better story on my own without, I can't tell you how much shrapnel I took when I would post something and they'd be like, can you change the wording on this? Can you do this? And I'm like, no, I can't. So it was like, so we built up their social media at the same time. At a certain point, I had a written rule that I'd have to post as many times for myself as I would the company. And wow. It was like, dude, then this isn't fun anymore. This isn't organic. This isn't how it should be. So to me, social media and then like seeing Nick's story and seeing how he portrayed it, I can't do the YouTube as well, just time management and all that stuff. I'm trying to dabble in it a little bit and tell more of a documentary story of our builds, because they're a lot, you know, not a lot bigger, but they're a little bit longer. And I want to tell that part of it more. Of my dream is to have that that Warren Miller ski video documentary about construction, yeah, where you just feel like you understand everyone's attitude and ethos about what their objective is every day. And that's the goal. But social really, I found that a lot of people want to get to know you without having any commitment to you.
Yeah.
And that's what's key, is that, you know, not a lot of people are outgoing and looking through a screen. If you can tell them what you're doing every day and the why, and you do that for 6 months, a year, yeah, 4 years, that doesn't change. Like you said, having 10,000 followers or 40,000 does not mean you're a popular person.
Right.
You're still the same dude in the same small town, getting paid the same amount of money, and your kids don't change, and your wife. Like, it does not matter. You don't have friends. I have the same five friends that give me shit every Thursday at hockey, and I yeah, love them to death about it. They don't value me anymore. But what it does do is those two or three people that are following along for 6 months or a year, there's no debate that when it comes time to build a home or renovate it, they're calling you and they will wait for you to be ready.
That's so huge, because what guys don't realize about social is everything you do and everything you don't do tells a story and establishes or gives you, positions you as the expert, or depositions you as the expert. And so that's where you just nailed it right there. Like, dude, I started writing, I wrote, I think my first blog post, and this is not including my painting business and stuff. I'm talking like for me doing what I do now, I think it was 2010, and it was terrible. 2010, 2011. And I just kept showing up and writing blogs. And then I created this YouTube channel like in 2013, 2014. I didn't do a damn thing with it. And then I started this podcast thing in 2015. And point of this whole thing is you talk about taking shrapnel. I had so many people go, why are you wasting your time with this? Nobody's paying attention. I just knew that this was a way for me to just be me, you know, and it felt right. And I just knew I just needed to keep hammering away. And what's so funny is hundreds of videos, hundreds of podcasts, thousands of social media posts and blogs later, it tipped, you know, and I don't think it's completely tipped. I think it's just starting to tip, which is crazy. And that's where I want to encourage you guys that are listening to this. If you have an Instagram or Facebook or a blog, or you're doing a YouTube channel, whatever it is, guys, you just got to stick with it and just commit, you know, just commit, burn the boats, get it through your head that this is the day and age that we live in, where one of the very first things consumers do when they're researching a company is they go to their social media channels,
yep,
you know? And when I go to yours, or I go to Nick's, or I go to my buddy, Alan Decker, who's a water feature guy out in New York, like Alan, it's crazy amount of revenue his company brings in just because he does a Facebook Live from job sites,
yep,
you know? And if you're a consumer that doesn't know you guys, and I go to ABC Construction and then I go to Vintage, two things are happening. Number one, you're established as the authority. And number two, right out of the gate, I know you ain't going to be cheap.
Yes.
So that's a pre-qualifier too, because it's like, oh, I can never afford them. Good. You don't want them reaching out to you.
but they also know your name. They also know who you're about. And then the other flip side of it, if you don't look at it from the revenue, and because let's say you start posting a lot and you don't get that job lead.
Yeah.
It's going to be this whole, like, am I doing it for the right reasons? Blah, blah. Here's the simplest reason to do it for is that if you've been in the industry, I don't care if it's 10 minutes or 10 years, you might have a trick or a trade that can save someone hours on their day, that gets them home for their friends or their family or their kids, you know, class or baseball you can go to. If you can save someone in your industry more time, this is an industry that's given me so many things. I don't go to work. I have a blast. So in my eyes, I want to give back to an industry that's given me more, and I won't be able to catch up. Even if I started 10 years ago like I did, I'll never be able to catch up to give back enough. So give back to that. And I think that's what's grown this community so deep. And I say deep, it's deep rooted, meaning there's Facebook, there's a lot of stuff that gets tossed around that's jabs and negativity. Mm-hmm. This industry and this platform is one of the most positive ones going, because everyone's out to help everybody. The tide rising raises all boats, and that's the overall goal. If we all raise it up, the job quality will go higher and the cost will go up, so everyone benefits.
Yep.
So I think share.
So dude, it's funny because I start going down the money path.
Mm-hmm.
You bring it back to giving back path, which just says a lot about who you are as a person and probably who I am as a person, right? but I'm so, you know, I've built the contractor fight because it's a fight between our ears to make sure we're getting what we're worth and we're not stealing from our families and things like that. So I by default immediately go, you better make some damn money, man. If you're doing this and you're laying in traffic for clients and you're up late and you're busting your ass and this. So, but I love, and this happened when I was on your show. Whenever I started going that way, the three of you guys would always somehow bring it back to, and I think that's a good thing. And I think both are needed. Okay. So it's like I'm just passionate about it because I've been the broke guy. I've been bankrupt. I've stolen from my family for years and this and that.
Same. We have a very similar story.
You know, I couldn't, I took my family on vacation one year.
That line got me, the vacation one. I'm with you. I did it.
And I couldn't afford ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, hey, everybody gets smalls at this gourmet popular ice cream place. I felt like such a freaking loser. And that's because, you know, well, anyway.
Whatever. Dude, I went to the hotel to check in and they asked me a card. And I was like, oh, what card do I give them? What card am I good with? And I'm like, but those are things. So you talked about two things. Purpose is money, and having that and doing that is definitely a purpose and it's critical. Yep. But I can do it through passion and get the purpose to where I need to be. I don't have to drill the purpose down for us. This is what we talked about before, is that, I mean, there's two ways of going about it. And it's kind of that ambiance and that kind of flair that you have, that you absolutely need to make money. You have to feed your family. That's what people always hit me with is, oh, but you got to make money. I never said I'm not making money. And I'm not going by the books and I'm not dialing in. I'm not sending invoices. It's not magic. It's not a fairy tale what we do. Right. It's just, I bust my ass and it gives me time to breathe so my personality can come out. And it's not just drilling down on certain things. So, dude, I love what you do. And I think it is absolutely necessary. So keep going.
Well, likewise. And I mean, that's why you're here, because I think when you're doing, I don't know whoever said it, but, you know, find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Right. That whole thing. That's what you're doing. That's what I'm doing here. We both have our why behind it and stuff, but I just want people to win. I'm in this so people can win and avoid. You shared about giving back. And if I get a guy home earlier, cause he learned a hack or something on our social media channel, it's the same thing here. If I could get somebody to be at their kid's game or whatever, or honor the commitment they made to their spouse about being home finally on time for dinner one time this week, you know, it's the same thing. We're both trying to have that impact. So, well, listen, man, if somebody wants to reach out to you, learn more about you, have you speak, they want you to coach them on their business. I don't know if you do that shit, whatever, you're a GC and they want help. They want to, where do they find you?
Social media, you can find me at as Here's Johnny H, and then also at Vintage Builders. You can find us at the.moderncraftsman on Instagram. Those are our three feeds. Vintagebuilders.org, and then that's pretty much me in a nutshell. And don't forget to hit the podcast every Monday, iTunes, and all your favorite podcast platforms.
There you go. Look at you. It's like you've done that before. So. Well, man, I appreciate you carving out the time to share your story with us today. And guys, we'll post all the links in the show notes and all that good stuff. John, I appreciate you, man. Seriously, I look forward to meeting you in person someday when all this opens up. I know we've shot around the idea of doing some crazy podcast event or something and live. Yeah,
well, I think live is definitely what's going to happen in the future. Yeah, when we get released again.
So, well, good stuff, man. Well, good luck with everything you're doing, buddy. I appreciate you.
And right back at you.
We will we'll talk to you soon. So, guys, appreciate you hanging out with us today on the Contractor Fight. Hit John's links and check him out. Check out the Modern Craftsman podcast. And with that, Travis, bring in the guitars, and we'll see you guys next time.
Want some fight swag to wear? Simply share this episode of the Contractor Fight anywhere on Facebook or Instagram using the hashtag #JoinTheFight, and our team will pick one winner each week to recognize your help in spreading the fight message.